Love me tender, love me true. All my dreams fulfilled. For my darling, I love you, and I always will.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jake.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1990 Fever Dream, Wild at Heart.
Fever Dream.
Directed by David Lynch. So, Brother Jay, tell me about Wild at Heart. I thought I had seen this movie. No, I had seen the VHS cover of this movie for the entire time, probably that you lived at the our parents' house, because whether I was living there or not, I'm sure the VHS copy was around. Or maybe even, did you have the album, the soundtrack album?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I remember that.
It's a great soundtrack, by the way.
Oh, it is. Yeah, I believe that. But it is a fucking weird movie.
Well, let's just spoil it completely. You get that the whole thing is just basically this jacked up, nasty, Lynchian version of Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, I was wondering about whether this was a Stephen Lynch, a David Lynch.
Stephen Lynch would have been its own kind of crazy.
Yeah. So is the Wizard of Oz thing a David Lynch thing, or is that a this movie thing, or both?
No, I don't think it's a David Lynch thing. I just think that it was a vehicle for him to finish this story out, to kind of flesh the story out, and it fit with kind of the theme that he was going for. So this, to me, is this strange Wizard of Oz homage, I think.
Well, it definitely has a dreamlike quality to it, because the characters are kind of caricatures, and they're well done. But it's not like there's a lot of development of characters, I don't think.
Yeah, I think, well, I don't know, because Lula's mom, you get a pretty good picture that she's kind of the Black Widow.
Well, she's devolving, definitely.
She's melting.
Oh, yeah, literally. Yeah, but there is just some weird shit in this movie.
Yeah, no, the movie from start to finish is this crazy ride, and it doesn't let up. And there's some things that when you watch it, sometimes you have to watch this movie three or four times, because I didn't get it the first couple times I watched it. I liked it, but I didn't really understand it. But then by like the third time I watched it, I'm like, this is an awesome movie. And I remember when I watched it last night, I was like, this is an awesome movie. I'd forgotten how much I loved this movie and how much fun this movie was. Because it is a crazy, zany movie.
Oh, definitely.
Just never stops. And it's got a cast of thousands. So that's the other thing, is you realize how many Twin Peaks people are in this.
Well, this is right in the Twin Peaks time. I mean, he took time off of Twin Peaks to do this movie.
But Sherilyn Fenn, Grace Zabriskie, Jack Nance, Sarah Palmer, Laura Palmer. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's wild.
Wild at Heart.
Well, and okay, so the Wild at Heart thing is a quote from something. Is it like a song lyric, or do we know where that really comes from?
Couldn't tell you.
Okay,
because she quotes it later in the movie.
Yeah, and it's hard to say what. Well, okay, let me skip a little bit around historically. So apparently this movie was completed like the day before it was shown in Cannes at the film festival, and it won the Palme d'Or. And people were like equally happy and outraged. Roger Ebert did not like that it won a Palme d'Or. He thought David Lynch was too cute by half. He, I don't have an exact quote here, but he was like, you know, if he had just spent time developing characters instead of being goofy, he could have made a better film. But he says that about a lot of David Lynch things. But David Lynch is not about making a straightforward film, I don't think.
No. And this movie wasn't necessarily a straight, I mean, this, there is a theme to the movie because it's a love story.
Yeah.
And it's only a love story between Peanut and,
by Lula and Sailor?
Yeah, Peanut. I call her Peanut. It's Peanut and Sailor. Because it's really the love story about them. And they're the constants in the movie. But they are also the kind of the forces of good and evil against each other.
You think? Is he the force of evil and she's the force of good?
Yeah. She wants to be good. But she's drawn to him and he wants to be bad.
Hmm. Does he want to be bad, or is he just the bad side of her coin?
No, I think his tendency is to being bad. He wants to be good, but he tends to be bad.
Okay.
She wants to be bad, but she tends to be good. Except that her role model is her mother, who, as we see throughout the movie, is not exactly a nice person.
No, she starts out as evil and ends up as crazy.
Well, I think she was crazy from the beginning. It just became more evident as time went by. The veneer came off, as it were.
Yeah. Well, so the early test screenings, we can talk about this a little bit later when we talk about the actual plot. But David Lynch, this is all adapted from a novel by Barry Gifford, and the novel has a very different ending. And so they had to play around with the ending a little bit. But they, of course, I don't know whether this must be a David Lynch thing, but there's a lot of improvisation. So they didn't know from day to day quite where they were going. They just knew that the test audiences did not like a couple of things. And they knew it couldn't, they knew it even though he didn't really, it wasn't his initial idea. He couldn't have it end on a down note after such a wacky set of circumstances and tragic set of circumstances happened to the characters. He couldn't have left them cold and lonely at the end.
It would have made it a much harder movie to palate.
Yes. So again, spoiler, has a happy ending, kind of.
But this movie opening, the opening of this movie is fantastic.
Okay, so tell us about the opening of this movie.
It's just fire.
Oh yeah, well there's that. Yeah, there's a lot of weird themes that kind of run through the whole thing. Like there's the fire theme, and there's the crazy smoking theme.
Where they're constantly zooming in on the cigarette.
Well, that is like a transition from the fire, which I think is effective. But like toward the end, when Nicolas Cage starts smoking two cigarettes at once, like what was
stress smoking. You got to get the nicotine in as fast as possible to kind of calm your nerves.
I guess. Do people really do that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right then.
If you've ever worked retail and you have people who have like 10-minute coffee breaks, you'll see dudes do that.
Like two cigarettes at once.
Yep, because they gotta get the nicotine in their body and get back to work.
Wow,
that's, they don't have time to smoke two cigarettes. I've seen people do it with three and four.
Huh. Well, you learn something new every day.
It makes you wonder how they just don't have a heart attack.
Well, yeah, it seems like three kinds of bad for you all at once.
Oh, yeah. No, it's totally bad. I mean, it drops your oxygen levels, makes you lightheaded and goofy, plus it just pelts you with nicotine, which makes you a little high. So that may be part of why they do it.
apparently Laura Dern, who's a non-smoker, during this movie, she lost consciousness at one point because she was smoking so much. So, you know, it's, yeah.
That's too funny. I felt bad for her.
You know, it's like, today I'm not sure. Could you actually get away with that today? Maybe.
Making one of your actors smoke?
Well, I'm sure you could. It would be a choice that the actor would make for themselves. But forcing them to, like, giving them the opportunity to smoke, like, I don't, something either like 40 in a day or four at once or something where she passed out. I can't, the stories are here and there, so it's hard to tell.
I would think David Lynch, when he was screen testing, would be like, you're going to have to smoke in this movie. If you can't smoke, don't sign on.
Well, yeah. Yeah. That's kind of like good night and good luck.
Kind of.
Yeah. So instead of actors having to go outside to smoke, they had to go outside to not smoke.
I can't imagine what that movie set was like.
Yeah, well, yeah. But of course, this movie is in 1990, so it was a little bit...
probably a little less uptight about smoking.
Yeah. But, and of course, they were hearkening back, like Nicolas Cage as Sailor Ripley was the sort of the Elvis character. And so he was already kind of a throwback. And Lula Fortune, Laura Dern, was sort of patterned after kind of a Marilyn Monroe kind of thing. So they were already kind of comic book cartoon kind of characters.
They're already kind of pre-iconic.
Yeah. And they definitely had a certain style. But yeah, so in the opening scene, after we see the fire, we see, or glimpse of fire, then we see Sailor Ripley, who is confronted by a guy named Bobby Ray Lemon, played by Greg Dandridge. And I looked up IMDb on Greg Dandridge. He has been in Boogie Nights, Good Burger, Escape from L.A., Cool Runnings, Menace to Society, Honeymoon in Vegas, Predator 2, Glory, Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and 4. Now, granted,
Honeymoon in Vegas, that was another Nicolas Cage flick, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Granted, he was in all of those movies as a stuntman, which explains why he is in this movie, too. Because he is... this movie, his character is required to give one kind of tense piece of dialogue and then get killed with Nicolas Cage's bare hands in a very bloody way, right in the beginning of the movie.
It's a very brutal murder, and it's very jarring at the beginning of this movie. It was pretty... I remember watching this for the first time, and of course, it was on VHS at that point, and I was watching it in my room, and I had to pause it because I was really worried. I had to think to myself, I don't know if I can watch this, because I'm not big on the violent movies. I have a hard time with violence, especially if it's graphic, because my brain just keeps adding to it. So I remember having to sit for a little bit and be like, I don't know, this movie, it could be tough to get through. But then I tell myself I've seen Eraserhead like 6 times. So
yeah, see, I've never seen that. So I don't know. Is that violent?
Don't even.
Okay. Don't, don't. I'll take that advice.
I'm sure somebody much smarter than me will have some nice thing to say about it. I just don't get it. I'm either not smart enough to get it, or I'm not lynching enough to get it. In the same way that Mulholland Drive, I still don't fucking understand.
Well, that is in our list at some point. Mulholland Drive, not Eraserhead. Yeah, the violence in this movie and the sex in this movie are not toned down. They're all pretty brutal. In fact, although there was one sex scene that was cut out because audiences and the test audiences, actually like half of them walked out.
Wow.
But we'll get there.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't done any research on this. So
yeah,
there's some pretty horrific off screen violence though, too.
Oh yeah.
It's not, yeah, it's only implied, that you don't get to see the full force of, but it's still pretty graphic. I mean, there's some pretty deep stuff in here.
Yeah.
There's some commentary. It also makes you wonder what David Lynch has about child molesters.
Well, yeah. Yeah, well, that's the other thing is that, you know, it's, again, these are comic book characters, but they're also comic book characters that bad things are going to happen to and have happened to. And he's not afraid, like, when we see about Lula's past, when she and Lula and Sailor are telling... you know, they're talking to one another throughout the movie and telling little stories, and neither of them are completely reliable narrators, but we get to see in flashback what really happened for the most part.
Well, you also get to see different sides of the same story.
Exactly.
Because it, as it turns out, spoiler, they're all kind of intertwined.
Well, yeah. So the we open with Sailor Ripley, who's confronted by Bobby Ray Lemon, saying that he had heard from Lula's mom, Marietta Fortune, played by Diane Ladd, who, by the way, is Laura Dern's actual mother. He had heard that he'd been trying to fuck the mother in the toilet for the past 10 minutes. And so the mother had hired him to kill him with this knife. And that's when Sailor says, uh-oh. and then proceeds to kill Bobby Ray Lemon right in front of God and everybody with his bare hand, smashing his head on a marble floor.
At some kind of cotillion cocktail social.
Yes.
I like that the opening of the movie is a setting that they mention it's Cape Fear somewhere between North and South Carolina.
Yeah, well.
They don't really mention where. There's a somewhere, just somewhere. You know, it's in there somewhere.
By the way, I had a chance to go back and watch the original Cape Fear. Because I remember the Robert De Niro Cape Fear noir movie.
That's the one I know.
Yeah. Turns out that's a better movie. It was a remake of Robert Mitchum movie. But I think Gregory Peck and Robert Mitchum, maybe. But
oh, wow.
Yeah, it turns out the Robert De Niro one is actually better. I think it's a better movie.
Well, it's a rare time when the remake is better. Although, as we experienced with The Manchurian Candidate, sometimes the remakes can be a little bit better.
Yeah, well, different. I'm going to argue that the original was better, but I think the original was a different movie than a different kind of movie.
I think the remake was the better movie myself.
Okay, well, we'll have to agree to disagree, although I like the remake a lot better, especially after we talked about it. So,
I agree.
But yeah, so back to Wild at Heart. Then, of course, Bobby Ray goes to jail for manslaughter.
You mean Sailor goes to jail.
I'm sorry. Did I say Bobby Ray? Sorry.
Yeah. Because Bobby Ray ain't going anywhere.
No, he's going into the ground. Yeah. So Bobby Ray goes to hell, and Sailor goes to jail for manslaughter. And then we flash forward to Sailor is released, and Lula picks him up and immediately hands him his snakeskin jacket.
Because it's a statement.
Lula. Wow.
Baby, I got a surprise for you.
Hey, my snakeskin jacket. Thanks, baby. Did I ever tell you that this here jacket represents a symbol of my individuality and my belief in personal freedom?
About 50,000 times.
You got a story about it? Want to hear it? Let me tell you about it. Here it goes.
Yeah, and okay, so research. This was actually Nicolas Cage's jacket. He actually said, hey, can I wear this jacket? And they're like, of course you can wear this jacket. So then they go, and again, you got this, so he puts on the snakeskin jacket, and he's got the Elvis thing kind of going on, and she's got the white trash, southern cotton picking thing going on. But then they go to the hotel and make sweet, sweet love, or just make down and dirty love. And then they go to see the speed metal band Power Mad.
But you skip past the whole speech so that they're in the hotel room and he's balancing the radio on his toes, which is the most amazing thing anyway.
Yeah, it's just weird.
Well, but she's talking about, was it her Uncle Pooch?
Yes. Yeah, her Uncle Pooch. He wasn't her real uncle. He was just a friend of the family.
Right. So screwed the pooch at 13 years old.
Yes.
So that made me laugh. I just had to laugh. So, but that whole scene was just hilarious with the radio and the cord. Because at first, Nicolas Cage has some girly toes, by the way.
You think?
Because for the first few moments, I forgot and I thought it was her.
Again, we see a lot of like feet and them like laying in bed smoking and just sort of talking in weird riddles to each other.
Well, they have their own language almost, I think.
Most definitely.
But my friend watched this with me on the, we were watching it together, and he said, I don't think there's a scene in this where she isn't arching her back.
Oh, no. And by the way, this was, she's got generally a no nudity policy for herself, but not in this movie.
I was going to say, no, she's all plenty nude. I mean, although, to be fair, you don't really see anything but her breasts.
Yeah, yeah, I mean.
But then, after they're in the hotel, you're right, they... is that when they go to the speed metal? Not, so the next scene after that, though, is when Mama has the little intervention. Because there's that scene where she's playing cougar hide and seek at the coffee table.
Hold on. Cougar hide and seek at the coffee table.
Yeah, she's crawling around and like, rawr.
Yeah, because you flash back. Between Lula and Sailor are reuniting, but Marietta, Mama, is off back in wherever she is. And yeah, she is plotting against Sailor. And so, yeah, we flash back to her and she's got weird stuff going on. And she is also quite often just improvising crazy shit. I'm sorry, you look troubled.
There's another movie called Wild at Heart, by the way. Well, it's apparently a TV show about a veterinarian and his family who traveled to South Africa.
Oh, of course. So, you about done with those nails, Peanut? Because we got dancing to do. And you expect him to go to, like, maybe a swing dance club or something. But no, they go to the speed metal club, where they are dancing like idiots.
Well, and I have to point out, Cheryl Ladd has the best nail polish throughout this whole movie.
You mean Diane Ladd. Cheryl Ladd.
Sorry,
Diane Ladd. It's okay.
Mama.
Yes.
Mama.
Oh, lipstick too. Lipstick and nail polish.
Yeah, no, the lipstick, but she's got these great fingernails and the colors and the shading. So many flashbacks. But yeah, I wrote that, you know, they end up at the Slash Metal. But that's usually not what I think of when I think of South Carolina. That's not really on the brochure, I suspect.
Yeah, no. Well, it was 1990, so it was actually still a pretty good speed metal time. And the first thing I noticed was that the drummer of the band had the PIT sweatshirt, and Chris Achilles went to the Percussion Institute of Technology in Hollywood, California. So that made me smile. And so the band is playing like honest to God speed metal. And then after the confrontation with the guy whose character's name in the credits is Idiot Punk, Sailor makes him apologize to his girlfriend and then leads the band in a rendition of Elvis Presley's Love Me. Treat me like a fool.
Caged as a great Elvis.
Oh yeah, well yeah. He was. Lynch told him you have to sing two Elvis Presley songs, and he's like, "Okay, sign me up."
And he did a great job.
Yeah, he did fine. So yeah, so that was weird that the speed metal band is backing him on a straight version of Love Me, and then we go back to the hotel room and make Sweet Sweet Love again.
Where Sailor reveals that all throughout his life, he really didn't have much parental guidance.
No, because he started smoking at age 4. By that time, his mama was already dead of the lung cancer. Yeah, that's what his parole officers kept saying in court, is he didn't have enough parental guidance. But they decide they're going to run away to California and break his parole. And in the meantime, mama is arranging for her on and off again boyfriend / private detective Johnny Farragut to find them and bring them back. Johnny Farragut is played by Harry Dean Stanton in his first collab with David Lynch.
Well, no, he was in Twin Peaks. Well, he was in Firewalk.
Yeah, exactly. They credit this with the his first collaboration.
I guess Firewalk with Me was later. I forget.
Yeah, but Harry Dean Stanton is he belongs in David Lynch's world, most definitely.
No, I don't think there's many people in this movie that aren't right out of a David Lynch movie. I mean, quite literally, they would fit in his universe.
Well, I think Harry Dean Stanton, just like when he wakes up in the morning, lives in a David Lynch world.
You think he ambiently just exists in Lynchian world?
I think so. In a way that perhaps Isabella Rossellini maybe doesn't. Although it fits in perfectly.
Yeah, well, I think Grace Zabriskie, you have to worry that she probably is in Harry Dean Stanton territory.
Yes, I think so.
Because this movie, her role here, good Lord.
Oh yeah. Well, when we get
what
to
a range.
Well, when we get to Isabella Rossellini, we'll have to talk about, you know, that her character is in another whole movie, right? have you heard about Perdita Durango?
No, that explains the music titles then.
Well, Perdita Durango is Isabella Rossellini's character. I'm just going to spoil it right now. And I had heard the name before. I'm like, where have I heard this name before? It's because there is a movie that is alternately titled Perdita Durango or Dance with the Devil that is a Javier Bardem movie that, except the title character, Perdita Durango, who is the Isabella Rossellini character, it's the same person, is played by, drum roll please, Rosie Perez. Which, if you put them together, Isabella Rossellini and Rosie Perez are the exact negative of one another.
Good Lord. Except that they put crazy, extra crazy eyebrows on Perdita Durango.
Yes. Yeah, kind of like the Frida Kahlo thing, but the Grace Zabriskie, she's got the full-on, like, monobrow.
Well, and...
and she is Juana Durango.
And that is just... there is so much effed up about Juana Durango.
Oh, yeah. Well, they had... that was the scene they had to cut because it was too disturbing. But we'll get there in just a second. So, Mama hires Johnny Farragut, Harry Dean Stanton, to track down Lula and bring her home. But at the same time, she also hires the gangster Marcela Santos, played by J.E. Freeman, who, by the way, was hired the day before filming started for his character, to track them down and actually kill Sailor. And he says he'll kill Sailor if he can also kill Farragut, because he's got eyes for Mama also.
Yeah, Santos is a little bit jealous that Farragut and Marietta have a relationship.
Exactly.
Even though the relationship isn't really a relationship, because Marietta's like, no, we're just friends. You know, we're just friends. You know, small F.
Yeah, well, Marietta is a user of men. She has always relied upon the kindness of strangers.
Well,
maybe not strangers.
She kills men.
She uses other men to kill men for her.
Black Widow.
Yeah, something like that. She is something of a witch.
Absolutely. A wicked witch.
Yes. So Marcellus is going to kill Farragut and Sailor, and Farragut's just going to hunt down Sailor and Lula. But Santos has hired Reggie, Calvin Lockhart, and Juana Durango, Grace Zabriskie, to capture and kill Farragut. And as soon as Mama sets this into motion, she starts feeling guilty. And she devolves in a crazy lipstick scene.
It's a great scene.
It's a weird scene. Actually, I think it's two scenes sort of cobbled together where she starts putting her like red lipstick on her wrists as if she has slasher wrists, and then when it comes to her next, she is putting it all over her face.
Right.
It is crazy.
Kind of like an Oompa Loompa.
Yeah, and I think it's at this point that we are introduced briefly to a Crispin Glover.
Well, but a little bit before that, you get Peanuts reveal. Lula reveals that her daddy was killed in a fire too, not unlike Uncle Pooch.
Yes, yes. Yeah, her daddy was killed in a fire. And that's how we keep flashing back, or we keep getting the transition between scenes. We see the fire. So the fire is going to come back. We know that. But yeah, then we meet Crispin Glover, who I can't understand why he's there at all, but he's there. He plays Dell, or Jingle Dell.
So right before Jingle Dell, though, they were at the hotel in Nolens. They've made it to Nolens at this point. And Lula has a line where she says that she tells Sailor that when we make love, sometimes you take me almost over the rainbow.
Well, that, and then I think this is where we start hearing about her visions of a witch.
Yeah, where you actually see a flashback of her mom as the Wicked Witch. And at one point, you actually see her with the little black curly-toed shoes.
Yeah, and then there's a good witch that starts appearing, and that's Cheryl Lee.
But then we get into Jingle Dell. That's when you finally move into Jingle Dell. And that's Crispin Glover, which Crispin Glover is always just effing crazy-ass cracker. As long as I've ever seen anything with Crispin Glover in it, with the exception of Back to the Future, he's just been a nut job, including the time on the David Letterman show, which I remember.
Yeah, in real time.
Like, in real, it was like, I think he actually like did a kick at David Letterman's head.
Yeah, with his platform shoes and bell bottoms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just kind of had this weird drug-addled breakdown, but
or maybe not drug-addled. Maybe just mental.
Maybe he's just crazy. But Crispin Glover is the Santa who's afraid of black gloves.
Couldn't have had
an actor more aptly named, since his name is Glover.
Well, and the whole thing about cockroaches in his anus, like
it's like Creepshow.
Yeah, but so things are kind of ping ponging back and forth because we have this whole segment where is it Mr. Reindeer?
Yes.
Santos contacts Mr. Reindeer, who's got like these topless stripper girls, and I guess he's the one maybe who hire Reggie and Juana.
He is the facilitator. Yeah.
And his trademark is the silver dollars.
Yes.
Because he's been contracted to kill both Farragut and Sailor. Yeah, so it's kind of crazy fever dream there.
Well, and there's some very strange imagery because I think he's watching a stripper as he's taking a crap.
Yes. Yeah, there's... Yes. Yes. He's on the phone in the bathroom, and he's got a stripper there.
And also, he's playing himself.
Yeah, it's... Anyway.
Still, I love him. Every time I've seen him in anything, I have to smile, because he's in lots of stuff.
Well, he's like a Crispin Glover character, where it doesn't really advance the plot any, but it just adds to the wacky factor.
Well, you get some of the understanding that he is an enterprise unto himself, where he clearly is creating prostitutes.
Yeah, well, either that or he's employing
them. Or a hit squad.
Yeah. Well, and who's the... It's Juana who's at the table, who is telling the girls that they're there to entertain Mr. Reindeer.
Mm-mm.
No, it's
Mm-mm.
somebody else?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's another Twin Peaks.
Okay. All right.
She was one of she's the mother of the kid in Twin Peaks, the Chalifonts. Frances Bay is the madam.
Yeah, so it's a crazy amount of Twin Peakiness here.
Mm-hmm.
Which of course when you're dealing with strippers is you know. Anyway. So then we come across Indian scattered on Don's highway bleeding.
Indians scattered on Don's highway bleeding. Ghosts crowd the young child's fragile eggshell mind.
Where Lula and Sailor are on the road and they witness a bad omen, a horrible accident. Which, by the way, would be a super creepy sight as you're driving along the desert at night and you see what you think are like clothes in the roadway. And you pull over and it's the scene of a fatality accident, and they reach only one survivor, a young woman played by Sherilyn Fenn, who dies right in front of them. It's like Night of the Freaking Living Dead.
Yeah. And it's it's one of those jarring scenes too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, and this is David Lynch has said that he got this idea. He wanted to see like a broken porcelain doll. That was his idea for this scene. He wanted to see Sherilyn Fenn as a broken porcelain doll. Like, she's beautiful, but her head is all broken. And then she dies as a bad omen.
Oh, dear.
So, and then, of course, what happens after this? And they know that things are bad. They have very little money left, and they head for Big Tuna, Texas.
Which is not exactly Emerald City.
No, it's not. No. And that's where Sailor contacts his old friend, Perdita Durango, Isabella Rossellini, wanting to know whether there's a contract out on him. She says, well, no, even though she knows that there is. But then we meet, in short order, well, after after Lula vomits in their hotel room, their motel room, in this little flop motel in Big Tuna.
It's just kind of a tell room. It's not pricey enough to have the mo part of it.
Yeah, it's lacking the mo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no mo.
So, it's smell of vomit because she vomits on the floor because she can't get to the bathroom but doesn't clean it up. So it's just flies eating the vomit.
Ugh.
But then we start to meet some of the other people in Big Tuna, including O.O. Spool, who has a memorable scene where he says,
my dog. barks some. Mentally, you picture my dog, but I have not told you the type dog which I have. Perhaps you might even picture Toto from The Wizard of Oz. But I can tell you, my dog is always with me.
Not exactly rocket science.
Yeah, so then there's that. But then we meet
Bobby Peru, just like the country.
And Bobby Peru is played by Willem Dafoe, who credits his false teeth, his prosthetic teeth, for the role in making him find that particular character.
The teeth do make the character.
It makes him talk different and smile different, and that's kind of how he found his character. However, do you get the impression that maybe Willem Dafoe is batshit crazy also?
Yes.
Because considering the movies that I have seen Willem Dafoe in...
Well, we saw him in, Clear and Present Danger.
Yes, yes. But also, like, Boondock Saints.
Yeah, no, he's always a little bit unhinged.
My son, what have ye done?
I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, you need to see that. That's a David Lynch movie that David Lynch didn't direct, but he probably had more to do with than just produce. I don't recommend it, except that I think you would appreciate its strangeness.
I like the strangeness.
Plus, it has Michael Shannon, which, as I was listening to the piece of the interview, that wasn't what I was talking about when Drew and I were talking about seeing Michael Shannon on at midnight. But I picked another interview with a local TV station in Chicago, and turns out he spent a lot of time in Chicago. So I think maybe what I'm getting is a little bit of Kentucky with a lot of Chicago.
He has that very Lewis Black-ish kind of Maryland, Washington, Chicago accent.
Yeah, it's I think it was a little, I thought it was maybe incongruous with the other characters I've seen him play.
But At Midnight's a fun show.
I like At Midnight because, as I told Drew, I could watch that show in 9 minutes because I fast forward through the commercials and I never watch the end because, you know, I'm just in it for the quick little one-liners. I'm not really in it for anything long form.
But then after meeting Bobby Peru, they're now pregnant, broke down, and they're pregnant, broke down on the yellow brick road.
Yes, they are. And then we have the most uncomfortable scene in the movie.
Bobby Peru as the bunny humper.
Yeah. So he goes in and he makes Lula very uncomfortable and then makes her in a very rapey way. Basically tells her, I'm not going to put the whole quote, I'm going to put the whole thing in here because it would be too disturbing, but basically makes her say, like, fuck me. And then when she finally does, after being, like, mentally tormented in a really powerful way, I mean, Laura Dern does a great job of acting this. Yeah. But at the end of it, when she finally, like, says, fuck me, he's like, no, I don't got time now. Like, smiles and walks away.
Well, but you're leaving out the point where he makes her climax.
Yeah, well, that was what that hand thing was?
Yeah, every time her hand relaxes like that, she's climaxing.
Okay, all right.
Which is, you see that throughout the movie.
Yeah, so it's a horrible, horrible scene. And then, of course, we have what's kind of a film noir sort of thing where we know that there's going to be a robbery and it's not going to go well.
Wait a second. So at the bunny humping, raping thing, you, at the end of that scene, though, you get to see her clicking her heels together.
Yes.
To try and conjure up Sailor.
Well, she's trying to click her heels together to make it all go away so she can all go back home. Right. But she can't go home again because it's home was never real. Because as we've pieced this all together where sailor used to drive for Marcela Santos. So he drove for Mr. Santos, and Mama thinks that Sailor saw Santos killing Lula's dad. But instead, Sailor knows there was a fire, but doesn't, you know, didn't witness anything.
Didn't see anything.
Yeah. So he finally pieces it together what had happened. But by that time, I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's all academic. And things are already kind of set in stone because he doesn't have any money. And Bobby Peru comes up with this robbery, the feed store robbery, which everybody, including Sailor, knows is a bad idea. But again, because he often just opts for the bad side instead of the good side.
He makes the wrong choice.
Yep. And so they do the robbery, and their driver is Perdita Durango, and they go to the feed store, and Sailor's got a pistol, and Bobby Peru has a shotgun, and unfortunately a sheriff's deputy pulls up during the robbery. That's problem number one. Problem number two is, of course, Bobby Peru is going to shoot the feed store employee slash owners, whatever. And then he's also going to shoot Sailor, whose gun is full of dummies, dummy. But luckily, the deputy interrupts everything. So when Sailor runs out and Peru is following him, the deputy, who has been knocked over by Perdita fleeing in the vehicle, he tells Peru to drop the gun. And there's a little bit of a shootout, during which point Bobby Peru accidentally blows his own head off, or face off.
Sarah's going to say he loses his head.
Yes, he does. Yes.
In a fantastically over-the-top, comic booky, head-explodey kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, they actually had to tone that down because they were threatened with an X rating for two reasons. Not even an NC-17, but an X rating. Because of the blowing the head off thing, which they actually toned down and, like, blurred a little bit. But also, after... when Johnny Farragut gets killed, Johnny Farragut gets killed off camera in the final version of the movie. But during the original cut of the movie, Johnny Farragut, Harry Dean Stanton, was actually like tortured by Reggie and Juana. Afterwards, Reggie and Juana have a big old sex scene that the audience, that's when they left. Half the audience just left at that point in the movie. So they took that scene out of the movie.
So they had it, well, because it was alluded to that they were, because she was super, like, all horned up at the fact that what was going on.
Yeah. Well, that was acted upon in the original cut of the movie, but that didn't fly so well. But then, yeah, so, of course, Sailor has been doomed from the beginning.
Well, and, of course, by this point, you've already been eclipsed by the fact that you get to see Sailor wearing a thong.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, is that there is some strange underwear choices in this movie, but oh well. So Sailor gets arrested and is sentenced to 6 years in prison. And Lula has the child, who she's going to name Pace, which I only found out later was her middle name. And we skip ahead another 6 years. And so Lula decides to reunite with Sailor over the objections of her mother. And her mother is pleading over the phone. And Lula throws water over her mother's photograph. And eventually her photograph...
Water and ice.
Water and ice, yes. But eventually, much like the Wicked Witch of the West in The Wizard of Oz, the water causes her to melt. But... when they meet Sailor, he decides in short order after meeting his son that, he's not good enough for them. They've done fine without him. So he's not going to stick around. He's going to leave.
He's going to do the best thing for them. They've been doing just fine without me, Peanut.
Yeah. So he wishes his son well and wishes Peanut well, and is going to walk off. At that point, he's confronted by a group of hooligans who he calls the F word.
He called them French?
Yes, he did. He called them...
He referenced them as fajoti.
Yes. Oh, it's French. Fragile. or Italian or whatever. What was that in Christmas Story?
Frigile.
Frigile. It's Italian.
It's Italian.
Anyway, yes. He's like, so what do you faggots want? And they proceed to beat him up. And at which point, they knock him unconscious and he sees a vision in the form of Glinda the Good Witch, played by Cheryl Lee, who tells him, don't turn away from love, sailor. And then he wakes up and he apologizes to the man. He says, I'd like to apologize, you gentlemen, for referring to you all as homosexuals. You taught me a valuable lesson in life. And then he runs back to reunite with Lula. And that's where he flashed back to a photograph of Mama at Lula's house. And that sizzles and vanishes. And there's a traffic jam in the road. And so Sailor runs over the top of the roofs and hoods of the cars, which... in those big old boots, and so that would not be acceptable. He would get another ass kicking at that point, I think, but oh well. So he reunites with them and pulls Lula up into the hood of the car, and as the credits roll, he sings the entire Love Me Tender to Lula, having mentioned that earlier he didn't sing Love Me Tender because he was only going to sing that to his wife. So this is the ultimate reconciliation, and he's gonna take her as his wife. And he sings the whole damn song as the camera pans all the way around him.
Well, that's roll. But see, that's the great gimmick to get you to sit through the credits.
Oh yeah, no, it's a good scene. It's not bad. The whole movie is actually really well directed, I think.
Oh, it's a great movie. I mean, it really is a great movie. Some of the violence, you know, there's the abortion scene, which is pretty jarring.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, there's the aftermath of the rape scene. There's the abortion scene.
And her rapey scene is kind of disturbing, too.
Yes. And then, of course, the whole Bobby Peru scene is really disturbing. And yeah, that scene that leads up to Johnny Farragut getting killed off camera, had they followed up on that like they originally shot, that would have been creepy to see Mona Brow and Reggie doing it in front of the corpse of Harry Dean Stanton. And I will argue that the corpse of Harry Dean Stanton and the actual body of Harry Dean Stanton probably would look pretty much alike.
Possibly.
So, if you've ever seen interviews of Harry Dean Stanton lately, no. I don't know if he's both drunk and a little bit losing his mind or both, but I think he has a biographer that's traveling with him that's doing, or maybe they've already done a documentary about him and she's still traveling around while they promote it. But he's one of those people that, like, during the middle of an interview on a show, well, they'll ask him a question and be like, well, fuck if I know, I haven't been paying attention to your questions.
My favorite John Hughes movie, Pretty in Pink. You played Molly Ringwald's dad.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have an opinion of who she should have ended up with? She did end up with Blaine, the rich guy. But a lot of people think she should have ended up with her best friend, Ducky. Are you happy with how they ended the movie with her ending up with Blaine as her dad?
I don't give a fuck, man.
Okay.
Like, I'm just, she's answering all the questions. Don't ask me. Give me another bourbon.
Well, he's 90 years old.
Well, okay, maybe there's that.
I mean, well, let's see, when was he born? 1926, he's 89.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
So, yeah. That's, you know, oh, he's still doing movies. Jesus.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, they'll ask him about, well, in Repo Man, were you channeling, harkening back to the 1940s? He's like, fuck if I know. I just got the script. I came onto the stage. I did my part. And I got drunk afterward.
Well, you know, he's like 90 years old. I get, you know, the fact that he's still out there and acting, good for him.
Well, of course, I get, let's see, Harry Dean Stanton and who is the other? Dan Hedaya. And now, did Harry Dean Stanton play Ziggy? Or who played Ziggy in the, not the Ziggy cartoon movie, but instead Quantum Leap?
What? You're thinking of Dean Stockwell?
Dean Stockwell, Harry Dean Stanton, and Dan Hedaya. Oh. All three people. They come out of the same mold. Maybe
I'm taking your geek card away. You should be ashamed.
Some are moldier than others, but they come out of the same assembly line.
Who are you?
You don't think that Harry Dean Stanton could be a relative of the Tortellis?
I don't even know who you are.
Sometimes. Okay. All right. So anyway, so yeah, so again, I describe this film as a fever dream.
Again, I stand by it as David Lynch's wanting to corrupt the Wizard of Oz for his own, you know, his own gain.
Well, okay, I think we both agreed that when we last saw Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, that was actually just a full-on horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, this wasn't quite a full-on horror movie. This is more like a horrible fairy tale, but like a Brothers Grimm fairy tale.
I could see that, but I still think the overarching story was a love story.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, you can have a love story in a horror setting. But this wasn't really a horror setting. This is a noir setting.
It did a kind of a grim fairy tale quality because, you know, the bad people ended up getting punished and the good people got punished, but they got punished less than the bad people.
Yeah, let's call it fairy tale noir.
Did you just make that up?
Well, yeah, but that's, I mean, I'm sure it's been referred to before, but no, I think we can call it a fairy tale noir. Now we'll have to think of other movies that are like that.
So now I just think of it as Pinot Noir.
Well, and then we get to Sideways and Don't Drink.
No. I was thinking an incredible, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt Pinot Noir.
Oh, see, I've never seen the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. All I know is that Martin Short killed a guy.
That's great. I mean, not great that he killed a guy, but the character is great.
Yeah, well. Okay, so anything else about Wild at Heart?
It's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, you need to go see it. It's fantastic. It really is great.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.